the Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Virginia.
Welcome to this virtual session of the Supreme Court of Virginia. We welcome the lawyers who will argue here today, and particularly we welcome the public that will be listening over an audio feed. Call the first case.
Shoemaker versus Funkhauser et al., James J. O'Keefe, Bradley G. Pollock, Appellant's Counsel, Joseph Newell, Randall H. Perdue, Appellee's Counsel. Mr. Garvo, will you please move Mr. O'Keefe and Mr. Perdue into the courtroom? Please allow 30 seconds for the transfer. Mr. Chief Justice, the parties are present and accounted for.
All right, counsel, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Jay O'Keefe, and I represent Ms. Shoemaker, the plaintiff below. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
The common law requires every person to exercise ordinary care in the use of their property to avoid harming others. Consistent with that principle, for nearly a century, leading authorities have recognized that landowners owe a duty of reasonable care to prevent people using their property from harming their neighbors or passersby in their presence. Allowing a guest on your land to shoot his rifle in the direction of your neighbor's home violates that duty. And when it has the totally foreseeable result of hurting or killing a person in that home, you can be held liable.
Mr. O'Keefe, this is Justice Kelsey. If I may interrupt you with a question. You mentioned a century of common law. The underlying implication is that the concept is so common to everyone's understanding that we would all know it. But the problem I'm having with your argument is your first two cases that you rely upon, RGR and Quisenberry, were both 4-3 cases, and you appear, from my perspective, to be wanting to extend the duty on the platform of those two cases to another unaddressed concept. So if it's so common, if it's so commonly understood to qualify as common law, why is it that our court is split right down the middle on the very two cases you rely upon, and your argument to me goes beyond that, even beyond the restatement? So help me through that thinking.
Sure, Your Honor. RGR and Quisenberry were both 4-3 cases. They reflect a longstanding principle in the common law, and in this particular application of the duty that a landowner has to govern the activity of guests in his presence on his land, that is absolutely set forth in the second restatement, which is discussed in brief. That's a carryover from the first restatement in 1934, and it's also explicitly discussed in Prosser and Keaton on Torts, Section 57, which is, again, a section that was cited by both, I think, the RGR majority and the Quisenberry dissent. So these aren't foreign concepts, and I don't think they expand common law concepts of liability beyond RGR, and certainly not beyond Quisenberry. Quisenberry was a difficult
case. So when you're talking about
with
the restatement of torts, are you talking about Section 318 and 877? What section are you particularly talking about?
Primarily Section 318 of the second restatement, which is a carryover from Section 318 of the first restatement. And I think it's also reflected in Section 54 of the third restatement.
So the grandparents are not with the grandson. They're not present with the grandson. We've never adopted 318, and it seems to me the presence requirement is your hurdle on 318.
Your Honor, at page 72 of the Joint Appendix, paragraph 13 of the Second Amended Complaint, there is an express allegation that they were present on the land and within view of the grandson while he was shooting. So there is that allegation.
Any landowner that's actually on the premises of a, 7 or 8 acre property and can look through the window is present? That's what present means?
Your Honor, in this case, the allegation is they gave express permission to their grandson to shoot his rifle in the direction of their neighbor's home. They were present in the property and within view of him. So they told him what they could do, and then they watched him do it, Your Honor. That is adequate under the restatement to impose a duty on them. And again, we're just talking about whether we can recognize a duty at the pleading stage. It is still up to the jury to determine whether proximate causation or even a breach of that duty in the first place is present. All we're saying is that this complaint, as pled, with its allegations of presence and express permission, are enough to state a claim for duty, especially in the wake of RGR and Quisenberry, which, though they may be 4-3 cases and are governing law.
So, well, let me switch gears on you for a second. Was the grandson a licensee of the grandparents under property law?
I don't know the answer to that question, Your Honor, but if you're getting to the immunity, the statutory immunity, when the statute...
Well, hold on. Let me ask you to answer the question. What is the definition of a licensee under property law? What's the legal definition? You don't have to give your case away with the answer to that.
I think a license under property law is akin to an easement or a servitude. And so,
no, a license is not akin to an easement. An easement grants a property interest. A license does not grant a property interest. It grants a mere permission. Am I wrong on that?
No, I think that's right. Again, I'm not fully familiar with the concept, but
The statute, subsection C, uses easement or licensee. Now, an easement is a servitude or an easement, which is a property interest. A licensee is a permission interest that's not property-based. So if the grandson is a licensee under C, that incorporates B, and B has the catch-all of catch-alls, any other recreational use, which would obviously include target shooting, since everything else under the sun is listed in B. So
go ahead, Your Honor.
What am I missing about your argument? You've not answered the licensee question. If the grandson is a licensee, where does your argument go?
Well, Your Honor, what the statute says is it says, or for the use of an easement or a license as set forth in subsection D. And you have to read the statute as a whole. So when you read subsection D, subsection C, and subsection E, it becomes clear that the easement and license in subsection B is talking about the right, the easement or license granted to the Commonwealth or a locality or a nonprofit to cross the land, to access another land, to participate in one of these recreational activities. And if there is any ambiguity in the statute as written as to what license it's talking about, that ambiguity is easily resolved by checking the statutory history, specifically the 2010 changes to the statute that added the language about a license to each of those sections. So when that statute is talking about an easement or a license in subsection B, it is not talking about permission to shoot a gun on property. It is talking about an easement or a license to cross that property to access another property, and it's talking about an easement or a license that is granted to a specific class of people that does not include the Funkhauser's grandson. So for those reasons, Your Honor, and also because the statute talks about assuming responsibility for or incurring liability for the acts of the third person, it's simply inapplicable because we're not asking the Funkhausers to incur liability for the acts of the third person. We're asking to hold them liable for their own express actions in giving permission to their grandson to shoot a rifle in the direction of their neighbor's home. That's an affirmative act. It created a danger on the part of a specific and readily identifiable group of people, that is, the folks downrange of their grandson's rifle within firing range. It had, to the extent that foreseeability is part of the duty analysis, it had a totally foreseeable result that's both expressly alleged as an allegation of fact in the complaint, but moreover, when you shoot multiple rounds in the direction of a home, you absolutely cannot claim surprise if you hurt a person who's inside that house. Finally, Your Honor, the Funkhausers can't escape liability by pointing at their own grandson because, again, they gave him permission to shoot his rifle. This isn't a case of typical third-party liability where the problem is that you can't control a third party or their criminal assaultive acts are not reasonably foreseeable. The whole problem here was that the Funkhausers did control the third party. They gave him permission to shoot in a specific direction. He did that, and he killed someone. So it's not a case where they can claim that this is an unpredictable intervention by a third party they had no control over. He was doing exactly what they let him do while they sat on their land and watched him do it. So for those reasons, Your Honors, as pled, the Funkhauser's actions were totally irresponsible. As pled, the outcomes of those actions were utterly predictable. And because of that, the allegations in the second amended complaint are sufficient to state a cause of action and particularly a duty that they owed to the decedent. It should now be up to a jury to decide whether they breached that duty. If the court doesn't have any further questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
All right.
Mr. Chief Justice and members of the court, may it please the court, my name is Randall Perdue at Timberlake Smith, and I have the privilege of representing Richard and Anna Funkhauser in this case and on this appeal. I would like to start out by saying that this appeal and the question that's presented to this appeal raises the issue about which the dissenters in both RGR versus Settle and Quisenberry against Huntington Ingalls warned us about. It is a reliance on a general duty to all mankind to substantiate and to assert the duty that in fact is asserted here on appeal for the first time. In the absence of any other articulated duty on behalf of the Funkhausers, this appeal raises the question that when a plaintiff fails to identify, after three attempts, any articulated duty, legal duty on behalf of the, in this case, the Funkhausers, does the general maxim of owing a duty to all mankind step in and provide that legal duty? And our position is that in this case, it is a suggested extension of the RGR against Settle and the Quisenberry rulings, in that when you delve into the specific facts of both the RGR case and the Quisenberry case, this case is readily distinguishable. The RGR case, and as we set forth in our brief, when you look at the RGR case and the facts of that case, there was certain affirmative conduct on behalf of that was taken by RGR that resulted in the accident that was at issue in that case. RGR was directly stacking its lumber, encroaching upon the Norfolk Southern right-of-way, and stacking its lumber into the right-of-way that caused the sight lines to be blocked. And in the Quisenberry case, the manufacturer was affirmatively using asbestos in the manufacture of its ships and in the even in the demolition of its ships. And that was affirmative conduct that was, the employee was getting the asbestos fibers on their clothing and then they were taking them home. The Quisenberry's, the Huntington Ingalls predecessor was not providing instruction to its employees and was not providing any way for the employees to shower. So there was affirmative conduct on behalf of those defendants in those cases that resulted in the finding of liability against those defendants. In this case, the actions of the Funkhausers were very, very passive, slight in this case, in that you have very, very limited allegations about the Funkhausers. The Funkhausers owned the property. I disagree with the characterization of the allegation in the complaint that there was express permission by the Funkhausers expressly to shoot the rifle in the direction of the neighbor's home. The allegation states that there was express permission given, but it does not provide that the permission included the express statements, yes, grandson, it is okay for you to go shoot targets in the direction of our neighbor's home. The court would have to infer that that interpretation of that complaint or that allegation, and that strange credulity to suggest that the Funkhausers would have expressly told him, yes, go shoot targets in the direction of the neighbor's home. The other thing that I would like to point out is the administrator's counsel states that the complaint states that the Funkhausers could see or were seeing or were viewing what their grandson was doing. And that is not the case. There are only two allegations in the complaint regarding sight lines. And on page 70 of the appendix, in paragraph 4 of the second amended complaint, it says that he was shooting targets within sight of the Funkhauser home. That is from Nicely's viewpoint. He was shooting targets within sight of the Funkhauser home. And on page 72, in paragraph 13, it says that the Funkhausers were at the residence within view of shooting by defendant Nicely. There is absolutely no allegation in the second amended complaint that the Funkhausers actually were present, were viewing, were watching Nicely as he was shooting his targets. The second issue that I would like to raise is the issue that is expressed in the reply brief in regard to foreseeability. In the reply brief, the administrator states that the proper question in this case is one of foreseeability, and the precise nature of the consequence need not be foreseen. And I would disagree with that statement. In the Quisenberry case, the court noted that the purpose of the test of finding a legal duty is to prevent there from being cases every time there is a conceivable foreseeable act. And there is a difference between conceivable foreseeability and reasonable foreseeability. In the A.H. against Rockingham Publishing case, this court found that as a matter of law, there was not reasonable foreseeability when the publishing company knew there had been three assaults within the previous 5 years before the assault that was at issue in that case. The court found that that was not sufficient to charge Rockingham Publishing with knowing and having reasonable, knowing that the act was reasonably foreseeable. In this case, there is absolutely no allegations that this was reasonably foreseeable. Was it conceivably foreseeable? I think our people could argue about that because of the nature of the allegations. Apparently, the bullets had to go through trees. They had to go around trees to even reach the apparent target of the neighbor's property. And so I would even suggest that the allegations in the complaint are not sufficient to show that it was conceivably foreseeable. However, certainly there's no allegation to support any that it was reasonably foreseeable, in that there's no allegation that there were bullet holes in the neighbor's in the buildings of the neighbor's property, that Mr. Nicely had routinely struck any part of the neighbor's property while he was target shooting from the Funkhausers' property. There is no allegation that the Funkhausers had any knowledge whatsoever that it was possible that bullets from Mr. Nicely's gun would reach the neighbor's home. So, in our position here is that if indeed the administrator's counsel is correct that the question turns on foreseeability, the second amended complaint falls far short of demonstrating any reasonable foreseeability in this case.
Counsel, may I ask you this question?
Sure.
Is our inquiry categorical? That is, under no circumstances can a landlord be held liable for something like this, or is it contextual, where we have to look at what happened? In other words, if someone has a 1,000-acre ranch and there happens to be a backpacker who gets in the line of fire and no one expected that. That's one thing versus a, which we don't have here, a densely packed subdivision and a high powered rifle. Is it contextual or is it categorical? What's the rule?
I think that under the cases, I think that under the precedent of the court right now, it would be very difficult for me to say that it's categorical. I think that the court has said several times that it's contextual and that you look at the facts of the case and you would determine that the duty can vary. I believe, in fact, in the RGR case, the court stated that the duties can vary depending upon the facts of a case. So I would answer that question and say that it is more likely contextual.
So we have a rifle as opposed to, you know, a BB gun or a slingshot. And then we have allegations of relative proximity of these residences. In other words, it's not like half a mile away or whatever, right?
Well, we don't have any allegation about that. We say it says the only word densely is used in terms of describing the grove of trees. The homes are not described as being densely in proximity to each other. We don't have any allegation in the complaint that would support a conclusion that this was a densely populated subdivision.
Right. But so, paragraph 4 does have that language of permission to shoot targets with a rifle on the Funkhauser property in the direction of 259 Charlotte Lane. Maybe there's some ambiguity there, but that seems to suggest the permission was to shoot in that direction as opposed to a general permission. And if it's a contextual inquiry, does that matter? Appendix page 70.
I'm with you, Your Honor. Thank you. My answer to that question would be that I did not read paragraph 4 as that all that the Funkhausers gave permission to all discrete parts of that allegation. Certainly they at some point, and we do not even know if it was immediately on that day, but that they gave permission to their grandson to shoot targets. I think the court would have to infer that they gave him permission to shoot targets in the direction of the home. And again, that goes back to my previous statement that if that is an inference that has to be drawn, the court has stated several times that courts can rely and draw from its common sense to determine whether or not that is a reasonable inference. And my conclusion here is that it's ludicrous to conclude that the Funkhausers, that Mr. Nicely went to his grandparents and said, I want to shoot targets in the direction of the Nesselrod home. And that the Funkhausers said, yes, go ahead and shoot targets in the direction of the Nesselrod home. If that is an inference that has to be reached, that is a ludicrous inference to draw in this case. And so
why do you think that inference is so ludicrous to draw when you don't know the caliber of the weapon and you don't know the distance of the house?
I think it's a ludicrous suggestion because there is no allegation whatsoever that there was any intent here that anything would be dangerous or threaten any neighbor or anyone. And to express that you can go shoot targets in the direction of a home, I just find that there is nothing in the complaint that shows that the Funkhausers would have acted with any type of maliciousness to reach that inference.
I guess that's the thing I don't understand. You seem to think there would be some inference of maliciousness. I don't see that.
I'm gonna
shoot in the northeast direction on the farm. The kid might not even know there's a house behind it, but his grandparents do. And they might say, okay, go ahead.
Right, right. Well, I mean, certainly there is no allegation of that in the complaint. And this was also an adult grandson who was familiar with the with the property. But at any rate, and if he said, I'm going to go shoot targets in the northeast corner of the property, again, that is not saying that he's going to shoot targets specifically in the direction of a home.
But what if I own the property? I know that's where the home is in the northeast corner of the property. I know it's there when he asked me permission, and he's saying that's the direction he's going to be in.
Well, again, if he were to say that, there would be a lot of variables about what the northeast, I mean, he could be shooting in various areas and directions that would not be toward, specifically toward the home. I see that my time is up. Unless there are any further questions from the court, we would ask that the court affirm the dismissal by the trial court of this case.
All right, Mr. O'Keefe, you have 5 minutes and 45 seconds left for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. And since we're here on an appeal from a demur, I guess it's important that we get straight on the allegations in the complaint. And to the points raised by Justices Goodwin and McCullough, the express allegation, not an inference, at paragraph 4 on page 70, is that the defendants, quote, gave permission to defendant Sean Jason Nicely to shoot targets with a rifle on the Funkhauser property in the direction of 259 Charlotte Lane at a firing position within sight of the Funkhauser home. That says that they gave him permission to shoot in that direction. To the extent there is any ambiguity in that sentence, it must be read in the light most favorable to the pleading, not in the light most favorable to the defendant. Finally, though there is no inference whatsoever required in that sentence, again, a defendant cannot avoid an express allegation in the complaint, a reasonable inference from an express allegation in the complaint, on the ground that it would imply culpable conduct on the part of the defendant. This court decision,
this is Justice Kelsey, is there any reasonable inference that the grandparents were present under Section 318 of the restatement? As your opposing counsel pointed out, the only allegation is that they're in the home. They maybe theoretically could have looked out the window, but there's no allegation they were watching the grandson, they were participating with the grandson, that they had any active presence. So if that were not a reasonable inference, then we're going beyond 318, and we haven't even adopted 318 in Virginia.
Your Honor, the presence is absolutely, again, paragraph 13, Joint Appendix 72. Nonetheless, they allowed him to shoot in the known direction of 259 Charlotte Lane, where they knew human beings resided, while one or both of the defendants Funkhauser were at the residence within view of the shooting by defendant Nicely. So you have the express allegation that they
I'm within view right now in my office through that window of a whole lot of things, but I'm not viewing it now. So presence is simply being on the property somewhere that if you wanted to look at them, it was sufficient. That's presence under 318 of restatement. Is there any authority for that?
Your Honor, in this case, we have the allegation of express permission. We have allegation of physical presence at the residence within view of the guest doing what you just gave him express permission to do. Under those allegations, it is reasonable to infer that they were present on the property for purposes of the 318 analysis.
So you're not alleging that they were actually viewing it?
Your Honor, the complaint says they were at the residence within view of the shooting by defendant Nicely.
So are you alleging that the grandparents were at any point in time actually viewing the grandson discharge the rifle? Are you alleging that?
Your Honor, I don't think we're alleging that. I think we're telling the court that they gave him permission and they sat there within view of him while he did it. And I think that those two allegations taken together are adequate to establish presence for purposes of the restatement analysis. I would also add in my remaining time that the restatement analysis, which is endorsed also by Prosser and Keaton, is not some wild-eyed expansion of tort liability. It's a bog-standard principle of mid-century negligence law This isn't an effort to stretch RGR or Quisenberry beyond any reasonable shape or scope. This is a principle that leading authorities have recognized for a very, very long time. And beyond that, just as a matter of common sense, and this gets to my friend's point about the inference and the culpable conduct on the part of the defendant. If you take a person off the street and ask them, is it reasonable, is it responsible to give a person on your property permission to shoot a rifle in the direction of your neighbor's home, they will have no problem with that, Your Honor. That is just what those words mean. And so for those reasons, given the fact that we're just here on a demur to a complaint that states specific culpable conduct that endangered a specific group of people under principles that have been long recognized in black letter negligence law, we would ask the court to reverse the trial court's judgment sustaining the demur and remand this case so a jury can decide if the Funkhausers should be held liable for their conduct. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your argument. The clerk will call the next case.